Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to this week's episode of Money Tree Investing Podcast. My name's Kirk Chisholm, and I'm going to be your host today. We have a special guest today. We have Cameron Huddleston on to talk about a new book that she just wrote in the last few months. I love the topic of this book because nobody talks about it, and it's such a huge topic, especially with the baby boomers getting close to retirement age. So we're going to be talking about having essential conversations with your parents about their finances as they age. But before we begin, let's talk about Betterment. Are you looking for a better way to invest during market turmoil? Consider Betterment. Betterment is a robo-advisor that uses time-tested principles of modern portfolio theory to help you manage your wealth and reach your financial goals. With Betterment, you don't have to worry about what the market's doing on a day-to-day basis. Instead, Betterment allows you to use the stock market to consistently build wealth. For more information, visit moneytreepodcast.com/Betterment. A lot of investors use Betterment, but it doesn't mean it's the right fit for you. Do your own research. Check out moneytreepodcast.com/Betterment to see if Betterment is the right fit for you. So today, we're going to be talking with Cameron Huddleston. How are you doing today, Cameron?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. Well, I'm happy to have you on the show. Cameron and I we didn't get to meet up. She was down at FinCon. We just had that episode a few episodes ago where we were live from FinCon. And unfortunately, we didn't get to connect, but I'm glad we had a chance to connect today.
Finally, meeting virtually.
Yeah. And Cameron's, so her background, she's an award-winning journalist. She's got about 17 years of experience writing about personal finance, and she's been in just about every major media publication that has to do with finance that you can imagine. Cameron, why don't you tell us a little about your background? Because you can probably do yourself justice more than I can.
Sure. So to be honest, I didn't become a journalist with the goal of writing about personal finance. I just happened to fall into this line of writing, into this specialty. I started out at a daily newspaper as a journal assignment reporter, and then found myself living and working in Washington, D.C., got a job with Dow Jones Newswires writing about business-related topics, and decided, I should go to graduate school and learn more about all those topics I didn't study when I was in college: statistics, economics, business. And so I got a master's in economic journalism and graduated in 2001 as we were heading into an economic downturn. And honestly, no one was hiring. Dow Jones had a hiring freeze. Bloomberg had a hiring freeze. But Kiplinger's Personal Finance magazine was looking for an editor for its website. And they took a chance on me. And I started writing for them about personal finance. Learned so much during my years there, and was there for 14 years. And then I've been with Go Banking Rates, which is based in California, for the last 3 or 4 years now.
And that's really interesting because I remember that time period where the pretty much after the recession, or the Great Recession, as people call it, nobody was hiring anywhere. Wall Street has been shrinking, I think, for a long time, and that just accelerated that process. I feel really bad for the people who graduated college around that time, just because there were no opportunities to be had. So I'm glad you fell into the space when you did.
I know. I certainly feel lucky.
Yeah. So I want to talk about your book a little bit, because this book is really a good insight into dealing with aging parents. I mean, we have this demographic shift going on of the baby boomers retiring, and a lot of problems come along with that. I mean, the baby boomers have driven our culture for a few decades because of their size, because of their impact, a lot of reasons. And now they're getting to an age where they're retired, and now it's our responsibility to take care of them. Is that pretty much how it goes?
Well, it could be our responsibility if they haven't put things into place to age comfortably in retirement on their own. And I think a lot of children and boomers might be in for a rude awakening. And even if your parents have prepared, it's still so important to be talking to them about their finances, because you never know when you might have to step in and help out. And is harsh of a reality as this is to take in, we all die. And if your parents die without a will without a plan, I mean, you're the one who has to deal with what's left behind.
Yeah, it's really important. And one of the things I wanted to ask you, because, I mean, this is a great topic, and I see this professionally. Most people don't really fall into it unless it happens to them. But what's really kind of the genesis of this book? Why did you decide to write this book?
I wrote the book because I didn't want people to make the same mistakes I made with my mother. She was 65 when she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, and I had not had detailed conversations with her about her finances. And like you said, you know, a lot of times we don't even think about talking to our parents about their finances, period, unless there's an emergency. And then suddenly we're scrambling. We're like, oh my gosh, you know, what do I need to find out? What do I need to do so that I can help my parents out? This is not the time to have these conversations. These conversations need to be happening while your parents are relatively young, healthy, and ideally before they even retire, because then you will have much more time to plan for emergencies. You can ensure that your parents have all the legal documents they need so that you or siblings or someone else can step in and actually legally make financial or healthcare decisions for them. Waiting until the emergency arises, people are much more emotional. They're not thinking rationally. And really, you know, the last thing you want to think about then are finances. And so this is something that I realized in dealing with my mother and her Alzheimer's disease. And I also realized how difficult it can be to get this information from a person who is having memory trouble. And the sad thing is, you know, I've been a financial journalist for so long, and I just didn't even realize that I needed to have these conversations with my mom before her diagnosis. So I wrote the book to help people realize how important it is to be talking to your parents sooner rather than later. And I wanted to offer them a guide on how to have these conversations, you know, how to get over your fears, how to start the conversation, what you need to ask, and how to talk about difficult topics such as long-term care.
Yeah. And I think one of the topics that comes up a lot is, and you kind of raising this, is there's certain taboo topics that you don't talk to your parents about. I think, you know, culturally, this goes back way back in our country's culture, but, you know, there's certain topics like money, health, politics, sex, things like that. Those are all taboo, especially with your parents. It'd be a little weird in some of them. But how do you approach this with parents when I know a lot of people, they don't want to be perceived as asking because they want money. Like there are plenty of people who talk about it because they can't wait to get access to the money, but some people just want to do the right thing. So how do you have that conversation and overcome that huge hurdle?
Well, the key to having these conversations, getting your parents to open up, is to make sure that you are focusing on them and not you. These conversations are not at all about what you might hope to get someday. And if your parents even sense that the conversation is about that, you know, there's a good chance that they're going to shut down, because parents oftentimes don't want to discuss what their kids are going to get because they might have divided things up unevenly, or, you know, they might not be planning on leaving anything to you and they don't want to deal with that awkwardness. The conversations are about letting your parents know that you need some information from them, because there might come a point when they need help from you and you want to know what their wishes are. You want to make sure that you can follow through with those wishes. And the only way that you can do that is by getting some information, making sure they have things in writing. So really, it's all about, mom and dad, I'm looking out for your best interest, and that's why I want to have this conversation.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's important to have that kind of a conversation. And one thing that I've seen come up a few times is when parents don't have conversation with their kids about the why, it ends up being a huge problem. So you had mentioned, you know, dividing things unevenly. Well, sometimes there are reasons for that, right? Like maybe one child is making 500 grand a year and the other child is making 50. Well, maybe there's a good reason for a non-equal division of assets. And I don't know in your experience what you've seen, but I know in my experience what I've seen, it tends to cause problems when people don't know the why.
Certainly. You know, and if the conversations go in that direction, you know, I mean, like I said, you don't want to push your parents too hard to discuss who's getting what because they might be reluctant to talk about it. But, you know, honestly, this is going to come down to your parents' comfort level. Ideally, they should be telling their children if they have divided things up unevenly, letting them know, yes, I'm giving your younger brother more because, you know, he has a low income career and you're doing great. And I don't want to be unfair, but I feel like your younger brother needs some more help financially in life. It would be awesome if parents did that. But these conversations are not so much about forcing your parents' hand. It's because, you know, at the end of the day, it's their decision what to do with their money. It's not up to you. It's up to them. But it's so important for you to get some information because, like I said, if your parents need your help as they age, you want to be prepared to provide that help and at least make sure they have things in writing so that when they die, family isn't fighting over who gets what.
Have you seen a situation where that doesn't happen? I mean, I have not.
I interviewed estate planning attorneys for the book, and I've talked to plenty throughout the years as a financial journalist. And they all say, you know, you think your family gets along until someone dies, and then everyone starts fighting over who gets what. You know, not everyone in every family is going to fight over who gets what. And I think certainly as long as things are in writing, it makes it easier. You know, there's a less question about who deserves what and who should get what. Obviously, when people do have wills, they can be contested and that does happen. But it's so important to let your parents know if you don't have anything in writing, if you don't have a will, the state has one for you. And state law might spell out that your money is going to be split among a spouse and kids, and maybe you don't want that. Or, you know, state law might decide your money is going to be divided up in a way that you don't want to happen. And it's so important, mom and dad, that if you want to say and who gets what, you need to put it in writing. Don't leave it for us to figure out. This is your chance to spell out who gets what. And, you know, it can cut down on the fighting. It's not guaranteed, but certainly it's going to increase the chances that people aren't going to end up in court.
Yeah, I have this rule, at least from my experience in going through this with clients, that every single time somebody dies, someone in the family thinks there's gold buried in the basement and somebody else took it. It doesn't have to be real gold, but just, you know, every single time somebody thinks that that's the case. And from what I've seen, it's just basically misplaced grief. And they don't know how to act when somebody passes, and our society is really bad at grieving. I don't think we're mindful about it. And it's hard because you got to deal with the grief. And on top of the fact, you got to deal with other family members acting irrationally. So what are some like tips that people can have to maybe, whether it's through parents or whether it's through other family members, to maybe kind of overcome this process?
So if you know that your parents are afraid to talk about death, that it's just a topic that people avoid in your family, you know, like maybe mom, you know, says things like, oh my gosh, if something ever happened to your dad, heaven forbid, as if death is never going to happen. You know, if your parents are talking about death in that way and avoiding the topic, this conversation should not be about that. Find another way to start the conversation. And maybe it starts out by talking to your parents about, you know, another big picture topic, their retirement. You know, mom and dad, what does retirement look like for you? Or how is your retirement going? And their answer will hopefully give you a clue. You know, they might say, well, you know, retirement's, you know, it could be better. We wanted to travel, but we haven't been able to do that so much because, you know, it's just so darn expensive. And then you could continue the conversation by perhaps saying, you know, I could show you some ways to travel for a lot less. Let me offer you some tips. Or keep it going. You know, well, you know, why is it too expensive for you? You know, are you, you know, what sources of income are you relying on for retirement? Is it a pension? Trying to kind of slowly edge your way in and get more information. If money is a taboo topic for your parents, initially the conversation should not be about dollars and cents. You don't want to say, mom and dad, how much have you saved for retirement? Because that's going to scare them off. So first of all, identifying kind of reasons why they might be reluctant to have the conversation can help you figure out what approach might be the best one to take. I recently heard from two friends of mine who had read my book and both had conversations with their parents recently. And one of them said, the first conversation is really the one that's the most awkward, but it's not all that bad. We build it up in our minds to be this conversation that's fraught with tension. And so many people I interviewed for my book, the conversation was not all that difficult. They thought it was going to be, but once they started having it, their parents were like, yeah, you know what? I'm glad you're asking these questions because I've been meaning to tell you this. Only a handful of people really had a lot of trouble getting through their parents. And even those people, after trying a variety of approaches and keeping at it, they were eventually able to get through to their parents. You know, but this other friend of mine used one of the approaches I suggested in my book, and it was so easy. She simply said to her mother, and her mom lives alone because her parents are divorced. She said, Mom, what if something were to happen to you and you were in the hospital and I needed to pay bills for you? And her mom said, wow, you know, that's a great question. I'm so glad you asked that. And now her mom is making a list for her of her accounts and what bills she has to pay and how to pay them. It was as simple as that. It wasn't talking about something like death that was really scary. It was just, what if this happens? And that can be a great way to start the conversation. You know, just pointing out to your parents that if something were to happen to them, you want to be able to help them out. You know, and it doesn't necessarily mean, what if you have dementia? It could be, you know, what if there's a car accident and I need to step in and help out? It can be as simple as that.
Yeah. And that's a great point. And it kind of brings up this question in my mind is, you know, I mean, you've talked to a lot of people for the book. How many people do you think, or percentage wise from your survey, have actually done any estate planning or put any thought into it, period?
Well, I can tell you that a Go Banking Rate survey found that 73% of people have not had detailed conversations with their parents about their finances. Other surveys have found that about half of adults do not have a will, a power of attorney, a living will that designates a healthcare proxy, someone to make healthcare decisions for them. So there are a lot of people out there who do not have essential legal documents. And your parents could be among those people. I can tell you that my father died without a will. And of all people you would think would have had a will, it would have been my dad because he was an attorney. He was also in a second marriage. He should have known better. You know, and I hate to use my dad as an example here when he can't defend himself. But the truth is, we oftentimes think our parents have their financial acts together, and they might not. They might not have these legal documents. They might not have enough saved for retirement. And there's a really good chance that they don't have a plan for paying for long-term care.
Yeah, that's a scary thought when you look at what the cost of medical care is going to be in the upcoming years. I certainly have some clients now who are paying for medical expenses and, you know, they have limited funds. They'll dwindle down over time. Depending on how long they live, they could potentially run out of money. And then the family's responsible, right? I mean, that's, if for no other reason, the conversation should be had for that. Because if, you know, if your parents are getting older and they need medical care, and then you're going to be on the hook for it to the extent that you can be, you know, that in itself is a problem. And that should be an urgency to have these conversations, right?
Of course. I don't think most people realize that one of the big reasons you need to have these conversations is because your own finances could be impacted if you don't have them. Because, you know, as I mentioned, most people do not have a plan to pay for long-term care. And by long-term care, I mean care that's either in your home, an assisted living facility, memory care facility, or nursing home, because you need assistance with the daily activities of living, bathing, eating, dressing. Long-term care is expensive. We're talking an average of $4,000 a month for an assisted living facility or a home health aide, twice that for a private room in a skilled nursing facility. That's a lot of money. My mother, who has Alzheimer's, and she was diagnosed more than 10 years ago, she's been in assisted living for more than 6 years at this point, and we've paid during that time more than $300,000.
Wow.
Wow. Yes. Yes. And I think a lot of people assume that Medicare will pay for long-term care. It does not. If, for example, you have a stroke and then you have to go into a nursing home for rehabilitation, it will pay for that short-term care. But if you have dementia, for example, it will not pay for your care in an assisted living facility. It will not pay for that home health aid. It will not pay for that long-term care in a nursing home. Long-term care insurance will help cover the cost of long-term care. There are life insurance policies that have long-term care benefits attached to them that you can use. There are a couple of other different ways you can pay for long-term care, but long-term care insurance isn't cheap. It's certainly a heck of a lot cheaper than the actual cost of long-term care. You know, and those life insurance policies, they aren't cheap either. And so as a result, a lot of people end up relying on family members to take care of them. So there's a good chance, you know, if your parents haven't done any sort of planning, you could be their long-term care plan. And I can tell you from my personal experience, if you have to be a caregiver, it is typically a full-time job, which means if you're working and you have a family to support, you might have to quit your job to care for a parent. And of course, that's certainly going to impact your finances. So talking to your parents while they are still healthy about long-term care can help all of you develop a plan for ways to deal with this very high cost that they might have to shoulder, that you might have to shoulder for them. You know, of course, it's a touchy subject because who wants to think about ever having to rely on someone else to take care of them? You know, and if you want to kind of bypass the emotional side of it, you could just simply ask your parents, hey, mom and dad, do you guys have long-term care insurance? And they might say, well, yeah, we do. And then you say, yes, you know, let's talk about what sort of policy you have. Or they might say, no, I've never even heard of that. And I explain it in my book, but certainly you can get online with them and do some research, look into it. And if it's too expensive for them or they're not going to qualify for it, you know, start looking into other ways to pay for that care. I will tell you that Medicaid will pay for long-term care, but it's certainly not as generous as long-term care insurance can be because you can only get Medicaid if your assets are extremely low, you have limited income, and you have to be in a Medicaid-approved facility. But it's an option. It's certainly an option out there for people, and people need to realize that it is there for them if they need it. But you know, if you talk to them about long-term care, maybe the long-term care insurance before there's a problem, you're talking in hypothetical terms. You're talking about those what ifs. And it's so much easier to do that than to wait till there's actually an issue, because then it's not, what if this happens? It's, oh my gosh, this is happening. How do we deal with it? And at that point, people are emotional, and it's just so much harder to think rationally about these things.
Yeah. And I love this book in that it gives you so many different ways that you can talk with your parents about these issues. One thing I wanted to ask, because I think, you know, given your experience in writing the book and talking to people, what are some good stories that you've come up with of some of the consequences of not doing this?
So I have one story that's really good. Certainly, this is a story that people could use with their parents. And if you do use this story, you want to perhaps follow up by talking about the benefits, something a little bit more positive. But there was a man I interviewed for my book. He's also a friend of mine, and his name is Doug Nordman. And Doug is a super financially savvy guy, but Doug had not had conversations with his dad about his finances before his dad developed Alzheimer's disease. And one night, Doug gets a call from the emergency room. His father is there getting emergency surgery. So Doug has to fly from his home in Hawaii to Colorado to be there for his dad. And Doug quickly discovers that he cannot access his father's bank account to pay his bills, sign his checks, because his father had not named him power of attorney. And the bank would not talk to him because he was not his father's power of attorney. Now, a power of attorney is a document that lets you name someone to make financial decisions for you if you can't. and you have to be mentally competent to sign this document. So at that point, it was too late for Doug and his dad. His dad already was dealing with Alzheimer's disease. His mental competency had declined to the point where he would have no longer been able to sign this document. So what Doug had to do was go through the court process to become what is called a conservator. Doug spent 9 months and $10,000 hiring an attorney for himself, for his father, because basically he was putting his dad on trial to prove that he was no longer competent, hiring a neuropsychiatrist to evaluate him. And he was also spending his own money to pay his dad's medical bills until he was named conservator and could get access to his dad's bank account to reimburse himself. I mean, that no one would want to go through something like that. No one should have to put their parents on trial to prove that they are no longer competent to manage their own finances. No one wants to have to spend thousands of dollars going through this. And it can be avoided so easily by simply encouraging your parents to meet with an attorney, to have that power of attorney document drafted, to have a living will. It's also called an advanced health care directive that spells out what sort of end of life care they do or do not want and name someone to make health care decisions for them. And that will, or the trust, if they want to take that route. Now, parents might say, you know, this is going to cost me money, right? If I want to meet with an attorney, it's going to cost me money. And well, it will. And there are some cheaper alternatives online, and those are better than nothing. But meeting with the attorney is the best option because all of those documents are going to be tailored to your specific situation. And if your parents are reluctant, you could always, you know, if you can afford it, offer to give it to him as a gift and say, look, I think this is important. I want you to put your wishes in writing. I want you to have something that lets you name someone you trust to make financial decisions for you and healthcare decisions for you. If you can't, I'm willing to pay for these documents because I know how important they are. Offer it as a gift.
Yeah, I'm still shocked. It was only $10,000. Wow, I want to move to that state.
The thing is, every year after that, he had to file a report with the court detailing how he spent his father's finance, spent his dad's money, how he managed his dad's finances. As power of attorney for my mother, I don't have to do that. I simply show the document to her financial institutions to let them know that I am the person who needs access to the accounts, who is making financial decisions for her. I don't have to file an annual report with anyone. That document has made things so much easier for me.
Yeah. I mean, at any given time, we have clients who have durable power of attorneys with parents that are either maybe incapable or kind of close to the point where they're not capable of dealing with this, or, you know, they're having health issues. And it is infinitely easier to deal with than having to go through this after. I mean, the court process I've had to go through, people, just like you said, it is a nightmare. And I'm not the one doing it. The people are, the clients, the children of the parents have to go through it. But just going through it with them, it's painful just to like see the experience they have to go through with the courts. And every state's different, but every state is a pain. So I don't think there's an easier way than to do it in advance. So I love your suggestion of doing it in advance. What sort of information, I mean, we talked about a power of attorney, we talked about advanced healthcare proxy. What other sort of information should people gather about their finances, or should they do in advance to really help prepare?
So if you can get your parents, in addition to telling you whether they have those estate planning documents or encouraging them to get them, if you can get them to at least share with you how they pay their bills, whether they're paying them through automatic transfers or writing a check, that's going to be super helpful. Because if there is that emergency, and if you do have to step in, you know, hey, things are taken care of. Mom has her bills set on automatic bill payment. So that's one less thing I have to worry about. If mom is still paying by check, then you want to talk to her about the benefits of setting up online automatic bill payment. You can offer to help her or help dad do that. You know, and if they kind of resist and say, oh my gosh, isn't that dangerous to have my accounts online? You can let them know, well, you know, actually it can be a lot safer because when your accounts are online, you can check them every single day if you want to make sure there's nothing fishy going on. If you're just waiting for those bank statements or credit card statements to come at the end of the month, there could be things that are happening that you don't even know about. So offering to help them set up that online account and online bill payment certainly is a great idea, something you should do. And that's going to help you gather some more information about their finances. If you're there helping them set up, you're going to see what sort of accounts they have, where they're banking, whether they have other financial accounts, what sort of credit card accounts they might have. The more details you can get about their finances, the better. And if your parents don't want to tell you those things, ask them to write it down. Ask them to make you a list of all of their accounts to include their social security number, their Medicare number, their usernames, their passwords, what sort of insurance policies they have, you know, where the lockbox key is to the box at the bank. And tell them, they don't have to give that document to you now if they don't feel comfortable doing that, but to tell them to put them someplace safe and tell you how to access it and under what circumstances you can access this. Because that gives them that sense of control. And a lot of times parents are reluctant to have these conversations because they feel like they're giving up control. So letting them know, hey, if you can just at least write this information down for me, so it's there, but you can hang on to it. Hang on to that power of attorney document until these situations occur, and then tell me how I'm going to access it so that I can step in and help you. Letting them maintain control of that information might make it easier for them to provide this information for you.
Yeah, that's great. And that's great advice. You know, we're kind of coming up on time here, but let me ask you, any kind of final thoughts or things that we haven't talked about you think would be helpful for our listeners to deal with their aging parents in the realm of finance?
One thing that we didn't talk about that people need to do, if you have siblings, you should be talking to them before you even have conversations with your parents, because you want to decide whether it's going to be one or all of you who have this conversation with your parents. You want to figure out what sort of approach you're going to use. And you also want to talk with your siblings about what roles each of you is willing to play as your parents age. I feel like if you can sort this out, get on the same page with each other before talking to your parents, and then letting them know, you know, hey, mom and dad, we've been talking and we want to be able to help you out if you ever need our help. And here's what we think that we might be best suited to do, given our proximity to you. If you come to them letting them know that you've hashed some things out, it might actually make them feel a little bit more comfortable having the conversation with you, because then they know at least you guys are on the same page and they don't have to worry about the fighting among their kids. So you certainly do want to talk to your siblings before you have these conversations with your parents.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point. I think honestly, that topic, we could have a whole nother episode working with siblings.
Certainly, because there's a lot going on there and plenty of families.
Yeah. And what I've seen is it's not just money, but it's feelings, right? So, you know, if there's a house involved, well, I grew up in that house and it really means something to me. Or, you know, there's this little tchotchke that my parent had and it's really important to me. Like sometimes it's little things that aren't monetary based. It's more emotion based or memory based. So, yeah, I think.
And when you have those conversations, if you're the sibling who's calling that meeting of all the children, it's so important to let your siblings know, look, we're here because we're looking out for mom and dad in their best interest. This is not about us. You want to give each sibling an opportunity to talk, and you go last, letting your siblings say what they want to say first. You wait till the end, but you want to make it clear, look, this isn't about us here. This is about our parents and doing what's best for them.
I really appreciate you coming on the show, Cameron. And for everyone who's listening, Cameron's book, once again, is Mom and Dad, We Need to Talk, How to Have the Essential Conversations with Your Parents About Their Finances. This book is great. I highly recommend everyone get it. And Cameron, where can people find more about you or your writings or your book?
Sure. You can visit my website, which is CameronHuddleston.com. And there are links there to buy the book, links to my social media accounts. I've got a couple of downloadable resources that are free, including a form that you can print out, give to your parents, where they can put down all of their financial information for you.
Are you a real estate investor? Do you invest in privately held companies? Do you invest in horses?
Wait, did you say horses?
Yeah, that's right, horses. Did you know that you can invest in all of these assets inside your IRA or 401k? Well, if you did, then you're probably in the minority, because less than 10% of IRA investors are aware that they can even use their retirement account to invest outside of the stock market. Even fewer actually do it. But there's a solution. We're here this week with Rocket Dollar. Rocket Dollar allows you to create and use your self-directed IRA or 401k to invest in virtually anything. That's right, virtually anything. They make this as simple as writing a check. If you want to take advantage of this simple way to invest outside of the stock market, go to rocketdollar.com/moneytreeinvesting. Once again, go to rocketdollar.com/moneytreeinvesting to learn more about how you can invest your retirement accounts in everything from real estate to Seabiscuit. All right. Well, welcome to the panel portion of the show. That was a great interview with Cayman. I really enjoyed that. This is one of those tough topics that people really don't enjoy talking about. And I think that's why it's so much more important. And this week we have a great panel. Once again, we have Miranda Marquette. How are you doing, Miranda?
Hey, Kirk. Doing okay. Bracing for the snow. We're supposed to maybe get snow today. So good times. Good times.
We're all excited for you.
I can tell. Actually, really, nobody cares. So whatever.
It's national news. That's all I know. I heard about it. But
it snows in Idaho.
Well, Miranda, this is Megan, and we've got fires down here, fire planning down here. So I don't know. I think I'd rather be in the snow today.
That's probably true. That's probably true. Unfortunately, stay safe, Megan. Stay safe.
Thanks.
Yeah. And also we have Megan Gorman. How you doing, Megan?
Hi, I'm doing well. So despite all the fire risk here, we are having summer in San Francisco this week. So it's quite nice out weather-wise. Fire season always gives us nice weather, which is sort of weird. A little disconcerting, but you know, when we had 55 degrees in August, I'll take it in October.
Yeah, I don't want to try to unpack that. All I know is California seems like a dangerous place to live on so many fronts.
Oh, dangerous tax wise, dangerous weather wise. Yeah, you know, if it wasn't so nice, plague of locusts. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, great to have you both on the show. So I want to jump right in and talk about, you know, some of the topics, because Cameron, obviously, she has got some personal experience with this topic. Megan, you've obviously been in the same industry I have, and you've been in the industry for a while. What's been your experience of what works when working with clients with these kind of issues?
Yeah. You know, first of all, I just want to say, I think Cameron is a solid journalist, and I've worked with her before, and I think she's a really good advocate on this point. I follow her, actually, because she continues to lead the charge on this issue. I think in terms of financial planning, in the 17, 18 years I've been doing this, you know, I've seen an evolution of this issue. And what I mean by that is, back when I first started in this in the early 2000s, clients would come to me and say, hey, I need some help with my parents. And when you sort of ask them certain questions, what you would find is financially the parents, you know, you'd say, well, what do they have? And they'd say, well, they've got Social Security and dad's pension. And the other thing back when I started in this back in the early 2000s is the longevity was a little bit different than it is today. What I have found over the past 17, 18 years is that when you start to carve into the generation above us finances, what you find is with the disintegration of the pension system, more and more of our parents are struggling financially or have sort of more financial vulnerabilities. And that is coupled with longevity. And for a lot of people, longevity is a blessing. I have a father-in-law who's 97, but for others, longevity is a huge challenge that adult children have to manage. What I have found, and I think this is important to note, is when individuals and couples engage in a financial planning relationship, there's some sort of mindset that the relationship is just about them, that they're in this cocoon and you're only going to be talking about the issues that directly impact them. And then as you sort of spend time with people and they start to ask you to help with their kids or their parents, there's an aha moment of, oh, wow, the generation that's above me and the generations below me actually directly impacts my finances, and I have to really involve them in my planning. And I always find there's a moment, usually when the parents are going into long-term care or dealing with these issues, that their adult children then start to take the issues they see their parents navigating and apply it to themselves. And they start to ask the questions of, hey, wait, should I get long-term care? Or what does this mean for me? And I'll give you a quick example. I have a couple here in California. The husband's parents years ago bought into a nursing home. And it was one of these facilities where it was an evolution, right? You could move in and you were a couple and there were social aspects. And then over time, there became an assisted living aspect to it and then almost a nursing home aspect to it. And as they went through his parents, first his mother passing and then his father passing, they came to the conclusion that the financial decision that his parents made helped them so much and that they wanted to pass that on to their children so that their children wouldn't have to directly manage finances to care for them if they needed in-home care down the line. So I think that's the consistent story I hear from clients. And I'd be curious, Miranda and Kirk, if you hear similar stories.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And working with multi-generations, I know at least for a lot of people I've worked with in the past, a lot of parents tend to compartmentalize things and they keep it like, this is my finances, none of your business kind of mentality. And it's something you have to have some deep conversations with them to kind of open them up and to get them to realize that it's not just you that this is impacting. This is impacting everybody. Miranda, what about your thoughts? What are some things that you've seen that's worked in your experience?
One of the things that I find is just being able to sit down and talk to them about, hey, let's talk, you know, I want to make sure that you're taken care of and I want to make sure that I'm doing what you want for the future. And you need to do it early, right? So my parents are in their early to mid 60s. And we actually started conversations about this 3 or 4 years ago. And part of it was just because my mom was dealing with some issues with her father. Now, still technically is. But the fact that she was dealing with these issues with her own father made it a little bit easier for me to approach and say, hey, I know that you're really struggling with what's going on with your dad. You're really concerned. Can we talk about what you and you and my dad, can we talk about what you have planned and what you want to see so that I can make sure that we're all on the same page later? You know, that made her a little bit more receptive to that. And so we started talking about it and different plans that they had made and different things that they had hoped to do. So I think coming at it from a place of like, oh, I want to make sure I'm doing what's best for you. And I want to make sure I'm in accordance with your wishes. And starting that conversation early before, and we hate to say things like this, but early before, because a lot of the time when conditions related to dementia set in, so, you know, things like Alzheimer's and Paget's disease, those kinds of things, when conditions related to dementia set in, people get suspicious and they tend to like fight back. And I know that Cameron talked about that too. And so you need to get this stuff done earlier before they start having these problems. Because once you're fighting them all the time, then it becomes this horrible choice between, oh my gosh, do I have to go through the process of having them declared incompetent? And are they going to resent me forever? So taking these two approaches is something that has helped me get the conversation going with my parents.
Yeah. And that's a great point. It actually reminds me of a conversation I had actually just yesterday where I was talking with an older gentleman who's a new client. I was also talking with his kids. You know, one of the kids was spearheading this set of conversations, you know, because the father is very successful and had done pretty well in his life. And, you know, when it comes to finances, not really his thing, right? Like he's not really all that adept at that. He's really smart in other areas, but obviously this is not his area. So in talking with one of the kids, we were talking about what to be done and, you know, how to set things up for him to make sure that he was all set with his finances. He brought up a great point and he said, well, I'm very concerned because I'm trying to be transparent and I'm worried that my siblings will think that there's something else going on. Even though I'm doing this with the best of intentions, there's always that question mark of why is he involved? Like, is he getting something different? Like, is he trying to take money from himself? And it's not that that's necessarily there with the family. like they have a good relationship, but it's the idea that it's this concept I talk about with some of the clients when we bring this up. It's transparency and intentions. So the best way to look at it is if you're talking with your kids about this, you want to be transparent with what's there, and you want to be make sure that you have very clearly stated your intentions. Because what I've found in the past is there's this concept of somebody in the family thinks there's gold buried in the basement and someone else took it. It's the reality that when there's a void of information, and this carries over for everything, this is just a human nature. Like when we have a void of information in a topic, we tend to fill it with something that comes into our head. It's not always the right thing, but we don't like having lack of information or a void of information. So we fill it with things, and sometimes it's irrational. So what I find is going through this afterwards, you know, with the estate and the probate process, families tear each other apart because they think there's something there that may not be. And there's no way you can convince somebody that it's not there, because you can't prove a negative, right? Well, how do I prove it's not there? Well, you can't, because it's not there. So, you know, I've found in the past that having a clearly setting out the intentions with each of the children is very important, so that everyone understands what is going on and why. Because the other part of it, from what I've seen, is the why, right? Like, oh, this was unfair. I was supposed to get this, or this person was supposed to get that, and it's unfair, or it's not fairly distributed in terms of whatever. And people get really upset about that, because many times the parents don't set out their intentions. They're not saying, here's why I'm doing this. I've seen a few people recommend this, but I've never seen anyone actually do it, is sending, like, writing a love letter to your family and just laying out, like, what your thoughts are. Yeah, I know people do it, but it's very rare that people actively do it. So I think in stuff like that, from my experience, those are some important things to consider as well. I mean, Megan, from your standpoint, what are some of the hardest issues to discuss with parents?
First of all, I really appreciate your point about transparency. I think that that's very true. In discussing things with your parents, there's actually work that you need to do before you go through that. And what I mean by that is, when we talk about this issue, it crosses all wealth boundaries, regardless if you have a lot of money or you don't have a lot of money. These are issues that we all struggle with, and it's a common issue. And I think that as the adult child, and maybe I'm looking at it this way because I'm, you know, I'm going through this, like it sounds like both of you are, is to do the work on boundaries. How far into this am I willing to go? And what I mean by that is, when you go to your parents and you start to ask the questions, you have to anticipate certain answers are going to come up. I have heard stories where people have gone to their parents and said, look, what's going on? What can we help with? You know, it seems like you're having challenges. And they basically open up Pandora's box of debt, because their parents have accrued all this debt and are basically just servicing it. And that's where having, as the adult child, having boundaries is important, because I think too much of the time we all just agree to help and sort of carry the burden. And we have to also be willing to tell our parents what we can and cannot do for them. Now, I'm really fortunate in the sense that the clientele I work with, when we get into these issues, they can go and step in and help their parents get into really good nursing homes or buy their parents a house so their parents could just live off of their savings. You know, I always joke, you know, you're wealthy when you own houses for your family members. But the thing is, most of us, most Americans, can't afford to do that. So I think as we go in and we want to broach these issues with our parents of how are you doing financially? How are you covering your retirement? What's your strategy for long-term care? We have to know within our own finances what we're able to help with. It's a slippery slope, because I think that's where a lot of people run into trouble. Cameron talks a lot in her writings about the sandwich generation, which is, by the way, the code for saying Gen X, because Gen X doesn't ever look at anything that says Gen X. But right now, that generation, the adult children generation, are helping their kids get through college, and they're helping their parents. And I think at times they make short-term decisions that actually hurt their own personal finances for the long term. And I don't know if you found that, Kirk or Miranda, in working with clients or talking to people.
I see that all the time with our generation. I think it's in some ways it's economic, because the baby boomers have done, generally speaking, financially well compared to other generations, just based on trends and a lot of other things. And the Gen X is trying to basically afford to keep up. And the numbers aren't there. So the Gen X is being a part of that. I empathize. So I definitely agree. I love your idea of boundaries, because that's such a huge thing. Miranda, what are some of the hardest issues you think people have to discuss?
I think the two hardest issues are, as Megan pointed out, debt is a big one. And then also like that inheritance thing, like, you know, it's like everybody feels icky being like, so how much money are you going to leave me? I mean, that's just icky. And as you pointed out, that transparency is very important too, because if you have siblings, like if you're going in talking about this with your parents and leaving them out of the loop, then it feels like you're cutting them out or trying to cut them out. And so I think it's really important that if you're going to have like some sort of inheritance talk or whatever, you talk to your siblings first, make sure you're all on the same page and you're being transparent, and then you can approach the issue together. I mean, it's never fun. All of this stuff is awkward. Nobody likes doing it. Like, it's just a thing that we have to do if we're not going to run into bigger problems later.
One of the other things that I've seen is the caretakers. So in this case, it would be, you know, the Gen X generation, or in some cases, the boomers, but the caretakers of elderly parents. When you talk about boundaries of what you can talk to your parents about, some people miss this part, which is the boundaries of yourself. So being a caregiver is extremely stressful, and you're giving up everything of yourself to take care of somebody else. And what happens many times is people forget about their own well-being. So they give everything to their parent, which is great, but if you can't take care of yourself, then you're really not helping either person. So a lot of people kind of forego their own pleasure, their own happiness, and they just try to help. What I find a lot of times is people don't give themselves boundaries. In many times, they don't take care of themselves, so they don't have the stamina to deal with this. They can't deal with the stress. They can't deal with all the stuff they have to do. And, you know, their own personal health suffers because of it. So I find that if people are really going to take on that role, they have to set their own boundaries, or else they kind of just get lost in the process and they kind of lose themselves. So I think it's important to recognize that part of it too, which is not really talked about that much, but it's also really important. So I want to ask one last question here. What are some examples of some things that are, I guess, some cautionary tales? I know, Megan, you've probably seen quite a few, but what are some cautionary tales that you can lay out for people to really be careful of?
I think that a lot of times it goes to what you hit on, right? I think if I did do a takeaway from this panel, I'd say it's all about boundaries and transparency. You know, the typical American family today is complex, multi-layered. You know, you've got remarriages and children from different marriages. Where I have seen problems, and I'll use an example, is I have a client. He's married to his second wife, been married 30 years, but he has children from his first marriage. In his healthcare directive, his wife is his agent, as is very typical. And because his wife, and this is funny, I don't know, when I run into estate planning, I find that often that the men will just mimic what their wife's decisions are. So if their wife is donating their organs, the guys will do it too. If the wife is being cremated, the husband does too. They're like, whatever she's doing, I'm in. So it makes me laugh. And I ran into it when doing my own estate plan with my husband. The wife had picked her brother to be the backup agent in her healthcare directive. So what did he do? He picked the backup agent to be his wife's brother, who is of his generation. And his daughters, who are in their late 30s and 40s, early 40s, found out about this and were deeply hurt. I think the client eventually got why they were hurt. And he was like, well, of course they'd have a say in the room as well. But for the daughters, it was so important that they be in the document written, you know, the two daughters' names either jointly or individually, that they could make medical decisions for their father. And I think that the piece of advice I would give to anyone is we're coming into the holiday season. And so this is a good time to almost broach the discussions when you are sitting around the Thanksgiving Day table. Not that you want to cause an argument, but we can't talk politics anymore in America. So we got to have something else to talk to our family about at Thanksgiving. And so one of the things I would suggest is if you go through the work through your own personal finances and doing your healthcare directives, or if you get long-term care, I don't think it's a bad idea for Thanksgiving dessert to say, hey, you know, guess what we just did? We did our healthcare directives. Have you guys all done this? And talk about it as a group. Because the other thing to keep in mind, and I have two brothers and my husband has two siblings as well, is when you get to these discussion points with your parents, your sibling relationships and how you all behaved when you were nine start to also kick back in. You know, what's interesting is in my family, my brothers are very comfortable because of what I do for a living, being in charge of the legal and financial decisions. But when it comes to healthcare, they are very clear that they want to have a voice in it. And my parents have heard this from all of us. It allows you to sort of joke about it if you can position it the right way. And if it doesn't work out over Thanksgiving dinner, there is always a football game on that everybody can go watch and try to bond back together. Because the biggest problems I see is, to your point, Kirk, when we lack transparency, and then also when we don't have the boundaries already in place to say yes or no.
Yeah, that's great. No, I appreciate that insight, Megan. Where can people find more about you?
Yeah, so my firm is called Checkers Financial Management. So you can find us online on Twitter. I'm at Wealth Intersect. And I also have, for my writing, I'm a senior contributor at Forbes, and you can find me at www.thewealthintersection.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on. And what about you, Miranda? What are some final thoughts from your perspective?
Yeah, I think actually you and Megan and also Cameron in the earlier interview pretty much covered it all. I mean, really, it's just about getting in there, kind of sucking it up and just like going for it and trying to do it with as much tact as humanly possible.
Awesome. Well, where can people find more about you, Miranda?
You can always go to mirandamarkwood.com. I have a great resources page with a wonderful list of the tools that I use to help me live the life I want to live.
Yeah, and you do have a great new website, and I highly recommend everyone check it out. I love what you've done with your new site.
Thank you.
My name's Kirk Chisholm. I'm a wealth manager at Innovative Advisory Group. We don't just manage your wealth, we make your life better. You can find more about me at innovativewealth.com. And of course, you can find me every week here on this show. So that's it for the show this week. Thank you for joining us. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can also check out our show at moneytreepodcast.com. So if you go on our website, you'll have access to all our resources, show notes, as well as a lot of the older archive shows. Lastly, please leave a show rating and comments on the podcast app of your choice. When you subscribe and rate the show, it allows us to get access to better guests and a lot of the top guests, which we're starting to get a few lined up here, which I'm really excited to share with you soon. So everyone have a great week ahead. And remember, no one will care about your money like you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.